All right, well, we've gotten to part six here, the fifth part of the covenant. We're onto the covenant with David this week. And as usual, I'd like to sort of recap where we've been. I think that's part of the whole point of this, is that we understand how things are connected and how they've all been put together throughout all of history of God's people. So, you may remember that on the first, the covenant with Adam, we had the first promise of salvation. The seed of the woman would crush the seed of the serpent. And there wasn't much detail there, but then with the covenant with Noah, God said that he would not destroy the world again right away, that he would give time. He would continue to preserve the world so that redemption could be accomplished. Then we got to Abraham, and God chose a particular family, the family of Abraham that was going to be the family that he was going to bring salvation through. They were going to be a great blessing to the nations. They were going to be in the promised land. They were going to be have a great name all across the earth. And then last week when we got to the covenant with Moses, that family had become a nation. And at that point, a lot more detail was given about how people interact with God through the sacrificial system. And lots of details revealed about the need for blood sacrifice and the need for and how we approach God and how we come to Him and things like that. But all the way along, it's been a covenant that where God has made promises that He will keep. Like promises that are made by grace. And then we are called to respond faithfully at each stage as well. And so, and all along, there have been these promises that we're looking forward to being fulfilled. And as you read through the Old Testament, you keep realizing we're not quite there yet. The people of Israel aren't really keeping the promised land pure. They're not really being the holy people of God. They're not really blessing all the nations. You're always sort of hoping for something more. The serpent is not crushed yet. So you're always wanting to build, and or you're always looking ahead to where the true fulfillment is. And so between what we looked at last time and what we're going to look at this time, the people of Israel went into the land of Canaan, the promised land, and they started kicking the nations out. But right away, you notice that there are problems. They don't quite get the Canaanites out of the land. They are already there's already sin within the people of God that brings judgment on the whole nation. And you can already see that they're not living up to what they're supposed to be. They're not bringing that peace and that prosperity in the promised land that they'd been promised. And the sort of the pinnacle, of, or maybe, I don't know, what's the reverse of a pinnacle? The very lowest point you get to at the end of the book of Judges. And throughout Judges, it keeps saying, there's this refrain that says, "In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." And it's especially bad at the very end of Judges. There's just a horrific story where Israel has gotten just as bad as Sodom and Gomorrah. It's almost like Sodom and Gomorrah take two. And it's just a horrible thing where Israel is not living up to being what they're supposed to be. And so we're left with this sense we need something more. There's got to be something more to this story of redemption. And that's when David comes on the scene. And so we have the early parts of David's life that we're not going to look at today, that God brings him out of relative obscurity to be his king. He anoints him as his king. And after he's made king, God makes some promises to him. And that's where we're going to pick things up in 2 Samuel chapter 7, if you want to turn there. I didn't get page numbers today, but it's in 2 Samuel. So 259, thank you. 259 for the page number, 2 Samuel 7. David has just said, "Well, I have a great palace, but why have I not built a house for the Lord yet?" And so he decides he wants to build a temple, and Nathan then comes back to him and says this to him. So Nathan the prophet, 2 Samuel 7, verses 4 through 16. "But the same night the word of the Lord came to Nathan, 'Go and tell my servant David, thus says the Lord, would you build me a house to dwell in? I have not lived in a house since the day I brought up the people of Israel from Egypt to this day. But I have been moving about in a tent for my dwelling. In all the places where I have moved with all the people of Israel, did I speak a word with any of the judges of Israel, whom I commanded to shepherd my people Israel, saying, why have you not built me a house of cedar? Now therefore, thus you shall say to my servant David, thus says the Lord of hosts, I took you from the pasture, from following the sheep, that you should be prince over my people Israel. And I have been with you wherever you went and have cut off all your enemies from before you. And I will make for you a great name, like the name of the great ones of the earth. And I will appoint a place for my people Israel, and I will plant them, so that they may dwell in their own place and be disturbed no more. And violent men shall afflict them no more, as formerly, from the time that I appointed judges over my people Israel. And I will give you rest from all your enemies. Moreover, the Lord declares to you that the Lord will make you a house. When your days are fulfilled and you lie down with your fathers, I will raise up your offspring after you, who shall come from your body, and I will establish his kingdom. He shall build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. I will be to him a father, and he shall be to me a son. When he commits iniquity, I will discipline him with the rod of men, with the stripes of the sons of men. But my steadfast love will not depart from him, as I took it from Saul, whom I put away from before you. And your house and your kingdom shall be made sure forever before me. Your throne shall be established forever. So having already covered all the Old Testament covenants that led up to this point, for those of you who have been here and have heard those lessons, you may have seen some things jump out at you, some ideas that we've already had, right? There are parts of the Old Covenants here. There's the promise of a great name. There's a promise of being established in the land. There's a promise of offspring, a promise of blessings to offspring. And so you can see this continuity here, that this is God reiterating promises, but he's making them more clear, more specific. He's saying, this is going to come through you, David, that these promises are going to be worked out through a king from David's house. And so you have extra elements here that weren't there before. This idea of, I will be to him a father, he will be my son. This means we're looking for a king who brings peace, who is the Son of God. And so there are little details that are expanded here. This whole idea of kingship had been referenced before. Moses actually gave them laws for when they got a king. But here we find the kingship, the kingdom that will last forever. He says, you notice the grace and the faithful response here. He says you need to be righteous, because if he commits iniquity, I will discipline him. But he says, my love will not depart from this house. That it's God who promises to stay with this kingdom. And you see this go on through the rest of Israel's history. But then we go on here to 2 Samuel, continuing in this chapter, picking up in verse 23. Chapter 7, verse 23, we see David's response to this. And you'll see how he connects things here in his mind. Verses 23 to 25. David says, "And who is like your people Israel, the one nation on earth whom God went to redeem to be his people, making himself a name and doing for them great and awesome things by driving out before your people whom you redeemed from yourself from Egypt, a nation and its gods. And you established for yourself your people Israel to be your people forever. And you, O Lord, became their God. And now, O Lord God, confirm forever the word that you have spoken concerning your servant and concerning his house, and do as you have spoken." We see in David's response here that he connected what was going on with him to all the past promises and all the wonderful things that God had done for his people. He understood that he was part of this flow, that God had chosen Abraham, had chosen the people of Israel specifically to make them a nation. And now he realized, God is making me that king that this nation needs. And that God's establishing this kingdom that will bring the peace that this nation needs so badly. And so he understands that there's a partial fulfillment of these covenants in him, but he's always still looking forward. He's asking God to be faithful going forward. Now, if we skip ahead through David's life, you know things didn't work out real well. David was not the perfect king that we're looking for. He's not the king He was the man after God's own heart. He was about as good as they came, but he still wasn't enough. He wasn't good enough. And we see a whole slew of problems, especially piling up at the end of his life. His own sons rebelling against him. His offspring are supposed to be a blessing, and here they are kicking him off his throne and committing awful sins. But at the end of his life, he does understand his responsibility to establish the next king in this line. So if you flip over to 1 Kings chapter 2, 1 Kings chapter 2, we'll read verses 1 through 4. We come to the end of David's life, and he gives instructions to the next king. Do we have a page number on 280 for 1 Kings chapter 2? These are David's instructions to Solomon at the end of his life, end of David's life. It says, "When David's time to die drew near, he commanded Solomon his son, saying, 'I am about to go the way of all the earth. Be strong and show yourself a man, and keep the charge of the Lord your God, walking in his ways and keeping his statutes, his commandments, his rules, and his testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses, that you may prosper in all that you do and wherever you turn, that the Lord may establish his word that he spoke concerning me, saying, If your sons pay close attention to their way, to walk before me in faithfulness with all their heart and with all their soul, you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel.'" So here you see David understood his responsibility to tell the next king to be faithful, to follow the Lord's commands, to walk with him. And David knew he had God's promise that God would make sure it happens down the road. But he knew the danger that Solomon was in, the danger of straying, which we end up seeing Solomon do. And if you know the history of the kings of Judah, it's not quite as bad as the history of the kings of Israel that eventually split off of them. But the history of the kings of Judah is not a very good one. And the sad part is that as you keep reading through the history of God's people, you keep feeling just how much we need a better king. Even David wasn't good enough, but his descendants certainly weren't good enough. You keep seeing over and over again that they don't teach the next generation. Even the best kings, so often it's their sons who are the worst kings. And there's this failure to pass on to the next generation, this failure to be that righteous king that God had promised, to bring that peace, that establishment that they need. And so as we read through the Old Testament, we get more and more longing for the true Prince of Peace, the answer to all these things. So going through our categories as we do each week, we've already seen quite a few of these things as we look through the passages. But for the promised blessings, God makes great promises here. The first is that Israel will be established in the land in Jerusalem. And it's actually not explicitly in Jerusalem until a little later on in 1 Kings 11, 36. But God establishes David in Jerusalem and says that they will have peace from their enemies. It's this promise that God's people will have a place and they will have peace from their enemies. There's also a promise that David's biological descendant will be God's son and will rule God's kingdom forever. So this brings us all the way back to the very first covenant, that promise of the seed of the woman, right? We know that there's a coming, there's a person, a human being who's coming, who's going to crush the serpent. And now we get a little bit more information. We know here that king, that powerful king, is going to be a descendant of David. So everybody else who wasn't David's descendant could stop wondering if their child was going to be the Messiah. But now we know it's going to be in the line of David. And that's where that hope and expectation comes from when you have Jesus born eventually in the line of David. We also have the promise that God would discipline those who stray, but his love will never leave them. This is, again, such a great expression of God's grace and the way that he works with his people, that he promises to be with us and he promises to discipline us, which we don't usually want to hear, but he promises he will never leave us or forsake us. Now, for the faithful response, clearly there isn't as much law here as we saw with Moses. There aren't as many explicit commands and rules for what they're supposed to do. But they are supposed to rule righteously. They're supposed to bring justice and judge with equity, as we sang in Psalm 98 earlier. And again, as we've just been talking about, they're supposed to train the next king to follow the Lord as well. It's always that responsibility to pass it on to the next generation. Do we have any questions at this point before we go on to the next category? Any points of clarification? Now, the good news with this covenant is the closer we get to Christ, the more we can see how perfectly Christ fulfills these promises. And this is certainly one where we see the wonderful ways that Jesus fulfills these things. And one of the places that we see him fulfill it isn't even in the New Testament. In Isaiah chapter 9, verses 5 through 7, Isaiah has a prophecy about the one who reigns on the throne of David. But that one who reigns on the throne of David is called the Mighty God. And so we see that Jesus is the only one who can fulfill this promise. He is the Mighty God who is a descendant of David, who sits on the throne of David. And so we clearly see that Jesus is the fulfillment of this promise about the king in the line of David. And then in Hebrews chapter 1, verses 1 through 5, we see that when the writer to the Hebrews talks about Jesus being enthroned in heaven, we just talked about this a couple weeks ago in Ephesians, sitting in authority in heaven, that the writer to the Hebrews connects those with this promise. God said that he would set his king to reign in authority and power, that the descendant of David would have great power, and that's what we see in Jesus Christ. And then most obviously, I couldn't just pick one reference for this. Every reference to the Messiah, to the Anointed One, to the Son of David, to the Christ, the Kingdom of Heaven, all of this language of kingship and David and anointing, all of that that is so closely associated with Jesus is tying this back to David, tying this back to these promises that we've had today, that we've heard today about this coming King. Now, what about today? We do have continuing promises today. We don't need another biological descendant of David, right? The king who is a descendant of David has come. We don't need another one. We aren't waiting for that. But he is still our king. He's still living. And even though we don't see everything in subjection to him yet, he is king over the church, and he's king over civil government. He's king over all things. And so we have that promise that, just as Ed was saying, when we have the difficulties in the world around us, we see the tumult and the conflict, the global conflict, that we have confidence that we have a king who's reigning and that he is working and he's going to bring final peace. That all those promises about being established in the land and having peace from enemies is going to be fulfilled in a final way when Christ returns. We're still looking forward to that incredible peace that comes under a good king. This is also, knowing that Jesus is reigning today is a reason not to sort of have an escapist attitude about life here. That we're not just in a world that's falling apart and that is going to just keep getting worse and it belongs to the devil and we just got to get out of here as soon as possible. There are a lot of Christians who treat the world that way. But ultimately, Christ is reigning today. And he raises up nations and he casts down nations. And so we don't have to fear that things are necessarily going to get worse and worse and worse. There will be an intensification of things. There will be a time of tribulation. But in general, we don't have to assume that the world is going to get worse and worse and worse, because Christ is king today. We can also be confident that when we suffer injustice, there will be justice one day. That part of having a king is knowing that king will bring justice. And so knowing that we have Jesus as our king means that one day there will be justice for every single sin that's ever been committed. So when you have been hurt, especially when you feel like the person's getting away with it and it's never going to be uncovered, there's never going to be justice, we have a king who is reigning, who brings peace, and who rules with justice. So that's part of the continuing promise here, that we have a righteous king in the line of David. So a few terms and ideas to look for. These ones are, there are even more than that we could have put down here. But anytime you see language about kingship, this should bring to mind the promise of the coming king, the coming son of David. So if you see the throne, anointed one, king, kingdom, descendants of David, all of these things should bring to mind this promise and make you see, make you think, how are these descendants of David not quite living up to that true descendant of David that we're looking for to come? But also the idea of Jerusalem and Zion is closely associated with this peace, the peace that the king brings. And so you'll see Zion, especially in the Psalms. We sing about Zion a lot. And that may not mean a lot to you when you're just singing along and we come across Zion. You know, it's, well, we know it's something to do with Bible and God's people. And it's maybe a positive word in your mind. But when you see Zion, you should remember that Zion is the place of God's king. It's the place where you have peace because God has set his king to reign in Zion. And so that should Zion should just spark all those thoughts of Jesus and the coming kingdom. So again, I won't take the time to go through these passages this time, but I hope that if you'd like, you can go through those passages and look for how understanding that David was to be the king and his descendant that was coming would be the great king helps you understand the Old Testament as a whole. And we're getting close now. We're getting closer and closer to Jesus Christ. And you could, after week of this, and I don't have the fulfillment, it starts to get that itch that you want to have that final fulfillment. And next week, we're going to look at the new covenant, which is predicted in Jeremiah. We'll look at the Jeremiah passage, but ultimately it's inaugurated by Christ. And that's where we are. We're not at the end of redemptive history yet. We're still in one of those sections. We're still in that progression. So next week we're going to look where we are, and then we'll be looking ahead as well to what's still to come. So that's what we have for the covenant of David this week. Does anyone have any questions or observations, anything that struck you? Yeah, I've heard that there are many other cultures where the genealogies aren't the boring part of the Bible. The people actually understand that to have a genealogy, to have that record, is an incredible thing. And it's a fascinating part of the story to know that God had that all planned out. And you start it with Matthew in the New Testament, and you sort of wonder, why is this right at the start? But if you've been reading the Old Testament, you know that all of those names and all that, God's specific plan that he's worked out to bring it to this point, to bring the king, the son of David, to his people. It's just an amazing thing. And God isn't a God of detail, and he understood those things from the very beginning. All right, well we have a psalm about kingship to sing here. If you could turn to Psalm 2A. Is that what I put on the sheet? Is that right? 2A. We looked at this during the sermon a couple weeks ago, but I couldn't fit it into the service because we had too many psalms I wanted to sing. So we get to sing it now. But this is a picture of Christ being set on the throne. That when he came, when he finished his work, God placed him on the throne and said, "I give you the nations as a heritage." And then this is the psalm where we have to think about, well, what does that mean for our lives? What does that mean for us as nations? How do we interact with that king? We need to kiss the son. We need to recognize Christ as king or else face his wrath. So this is a psalm that looks ahead for David writing about the coming king. So Psalm 2, why don't we stand to sing?